same than the last time you saw him, Mr. Johnson. Sorry. General, can you start with your presentation, please?
Yes, certainly, Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Chair, just for starters, I must apologize. We were not on the agenda this morning, so I did not prepare duly for copies to the House. The copies will be made available, but we are ready for support of the Secretariat, and we do have our House in order in terms of the questions that will follow up. We will try to the best of our abilities to address all those. What we have done in preparation for the implementation plan is what is shown on the board, because in line with what has been presented in the DNA policy, I would like to take a premise of where was this implementation plan based on. It is good, Chair, to perhaps say that the policy would have perhaps been the starting document before even the bill was submitted, because it goes a long way in addressing key issues within the bill. But be that as it may, the policy is here now for consideration, but the bill was already in there. So we had highlighted issues from the bill that were deemed to be the must-dos as in the current status before the passing or the changing, depending on what the outcome those would be. So we looked into the contents of the bill. We saw which ones will be compulsory, which ones will be optional, and based on those, prioritize how the whole plan for the DNA policy could be implemented in our environment. You will see then on the screen we have the must-dos and the copies and the statements as to what informs the must-dos and the implementation plan. The first one talks to the taking of the DNA reference samples, the barcode swabs. OMA is already presented on taking the reference samples, that it is not an invasive process to do. Police officers will be able to take the DNA barcode swabs, but then we also determined which type of police officers that will take the DNA samples. That portion in the bill, it's not a compulsory portion. It is written in a may-do portion, but we will talk to it as it plays a very critical role in any case in the entire policy. When you look at item number 2, defining a DNA profile as a string of alphanumeric characters containing no medical information or predisposition of the person. Only the gender of the person is indicated in the string of numeric characters, but the forensic DNA profile has meaning when it is used to compare with another DNA profile. So SAPS can use the forensic marker set to tap the DNA reference samples, and it only provides a forensic profile. In here, amongst other issues that were raised in relation to the privacy issue, is the information contained in the DNA profile. Questions have been asked, if you have my profile on the DNA database, would you be able to tell how intelligent am I? What color eyes do I have? Will you be able to tell what genetic diseases we do possess? Forensic DNA is not for those purposes. We will not be able to tell. It is only the discriminating alphanumerics, as it is compared there, which will be contained in the DNA database. Therefore, the report or the profile itself does not carry any information that would be useful medically, socially, or otherwise in the profile itself. But it does certainly identify one individual from another. It is a prior, it is a must-do thing. It means we need to have a discriminatory kit or chemistry that will be used or utilized in identifying or perhaps discriminating against the individual. Number 3, talk to the fingerprints of any person arrested on any charge deemed to have been convicted for any offense under Section 47. It leaves a bit of the discretion to the police officer to say, what kind of charge or what type of arrest am I making? You will see when you talk to the implementation plan, also following the DNA policy as it was presented, that not all categories of crime will warrant a DNA profile to be taken. At times, is it a correct arrest? Was it a lawful arrest? Was it an unlawful arrest? Under which circumstances will you then take a DNA profile or a sample for a DNA profile? Is it now called an RFD index? Is it called a suspect index? On which basis do you take what sample by whom? Those are the factors that are very interesting that are coming up, but we sort of must just highlight. Taking a DNA reference sample under certain circumstances also talked to the previous issue. which circumstances are certain? Will the certain also imply the types of crime committed? Will the burglary cases fall under the category certain crimes? Those will be defined also in the policy as it was presented earlier. Taking a DNA reference sample for investigative purposes, this bill intends to do DNA for investigative purposes. This is not a diagnostic information, it is not a DNA used for any disease comparison, but it is for crime and crime and crime alone. Further, providing for the destroying of DNA reference sample within a certain period. When we look into the issue, I know it has been presented that, for example, after the findings of the court that person is not guilty, perhaps it was an unlawful arrest, but the DNA profile had already been typed, there is a recommendation in the policy document that says expunge within 6 months. We have got to look at the logistical issues that surround that. It will be practical given the resources. Will it be practical given the whatever it has taken to get to the result like that? And a number of other issues as we talk to the implementation plan. Expanding the forensic profile within a certain period, but not before 2 years. Further, regulating the destruction of the DNA reference samples taken under the Act. These are now talking to samples themselves. In the presentation, it has been explained that all samples will be destroyed. But then, does all include the convicted samples as well? Because those are genetic material still capable of being used for other purposes, if it is intended to be used for any other purposes. Under which circumstances do you destroy what type of samples? Further, regulating the destruction of DNA reference samples, amending the sub-act to regulate the storing and the usage of samples of certain categories of persons. Will the certain categories of persons imply the convicted offenders? Who are the certain categories of personnel? Providing for keeping databases and comparative searches against other databases. Which one will be the other database? Will it be the indices within the other databases? Will it be the databases besides the criminal investigation? Could it be the databases for missing persons and unidentified bodies? These are the databases not necessarily for criminal investigations, but perhaps for identifications in order to close down a matter of somebody when missing, not identified. Providing for the development of security measures relating to the integrity of information stored on the forensic DNA database. This is a very key issue also. You can have the DNA database, but what security measures do you put in there? Who's going to have access to the database? Who's going to utilize information from the database? What type of personnel is going to utilize that information? Is that personnel fit to the office to do such? Are they vetted? What are the real access biometric usage? Can you be able to track to what stage was what used by whom? Who gave in the information in order to get? Those are some of the considerations that must be taken into account when you talk implementation and perhaps passing the bill. Providing for the joint development of standard operating procedures regarding the access to the forensic database. Amongst other things that are key, which are presented by the Secretariat, is the oversight body, the role of the oversight body. In countries that the Portfolio Committee visited, we saw the real benefits of using the oversight body in terms of compilation of the standard operating procedures. If one organization will have absolute powers over the role or the procedures emanating from the DNA database, it may likely be taken beyond the intended board purposes of a database. But if you have a collective, Department of Justice, specific NGOs or all NGOs, you have the critical role players, the Department of Health, or key stakeholders in it, the people who will sit and govern the operations of the database to ensure that the intended purpose of the forensic DNA database are set will go a long way in ensuring that all violations or all concerns surrounding human rights issues are concerned. So that is a key issue. It may be administered, as the bill says, by the Division Forensic Service, but who's going to be governing it is a different point altogether. Providing for the issue of the national instructions within a certain period, followed by the police officials' orders to implement the provisions of the Act. It is the bill also amends to a great extent the SAPS Act. It provides the National Commissioner with the powers to issue the national instructions so that all the police officials abide to the national instructions in terms of the purposes intended for the bill, providing for the development of training courses to ensure that adequate training is taking place. This is also a very key area. It's no point to pass a DNA, and then the very people that are attending to collection of the crime samples are not duly trained. It is the position of the Division Forensics that people that are doing crime scenes, that go to scenes for processing, collection of the crime scene stains, do not become the same person who also go and collect the reference samples, just for independence sake. You are a police officer, you are examining your crime scene, you will surely want to make an arrest. So we do not want to have those biasness issues coming forth as to this person who collected this crime sample is a very simple person who's going to collect the reference samples. How likely can it be that someone's DNA may be planted in a scene? So when we define the authorized police officer who is going to collect the reference sample from the intended person, it needs to be carefully discussed as to exactly who is this person who is going to be collecting the sample, police officers as they are. Okay. Also talk to the providing of the oversight committee to manage the quality standards for the forensic typing laboratories. A critical area was raised this morning about the accreditation of forensic laboratories. The portfolio committees are awaiting the presentation. In the next meeting of Parliament of the portfolio, the division is charged to present the accreditation plan. This plan is going to be presented at that stage as to how far are you going, where have you come from, and what are the mechanisms that you've put in place to ensure that the laboratories are accredited as it has been required, just in support of the bill. That's why at that point, perhaps questions may come in. Now that you're not accredited, are your results acceptable in court? That's another key issue. The previous time when we were in Parliament, I cited two examples of the cases where the judges did not want to use the DNA report or the forensic reports for the fact that our laboratories are not accredited. And the status of the Constitution, the Department of Justice is viewing those cases because for all intended purposes, the paper trail that was requested was provided to the judge, although they acknowledged receipt of all. He was just not confident of the fact that the results were not coming from the accredited laboratory. Something will change when the accreditation status is obtained. Amending the Firearms Control Act of 2000 in respect of the DNA reference samples for investigation purposes as well as the Explosives Act. In those categories where there is a must-dos, when we talk to the plan, you will realize that we have the must-dos in there. What have we done thus far? What is the current instance? What is the plan? How much will it cost, anticipated cost, as we are now sitting? Now I'm going to take to the may-dos. I think it's mainly the two critical may-dos that are in the provision of the legislation. These are taken to the reference samples. This was the first instance that was highlighted in the previous section that the police officer may take a DNA sample to further investigate their case. But this may is a very critical may. At this stage, we've already also published a tender to ensure that according to the National Health Act now, police officers can train police officers on taking reference samples. In the past, as is currently said, only the medical practitioners could take the DNA samples from the victim. It used to be the blood samples, intimate, because they involve the pricking. Currently, it's going to be the buccal swabs that which processes in-house are developed technologically to be able to process the buccal swabs. But still, the Health Act provides that unless that police officer is trained by the medical practitioner to take that sample, we won't be in compliance. To that extent, we have compiled the base document, the process, which is already advertised on the 8th of June, so that that process begins to kickstart. But be it as it may, that the practitioners will do that part of the literal training, awareness is already taking place within SAPS internally to alert or to promote the going forward of this particular bill. So, Chair, I'm going to stop here in terms of this breakdown of the maybes and the may not, the may-dos, and then go on directly to the implementation plan, which is also not in slide in a slide format, but I'm going to talk to each of these issues and the estimated costs and what is the action steps taken, what are the cost implications. It's not so much of a long document. May I proceed, Chair? Thank you. Okay, the first issue there is the subject is talking to the collection of the DNA reference samples of certain categories of persons. This will include now which the reasons why the samples will be taken. The Schedule 1 offenses, which includes the contact, property, and offenses related to firearms, explosives, and drug-related. What will be the implications or the critical factors in this? We are expecting an influx of DNA reference samples of non-intimate background stuff. So you would imagine that the current workload per annum that will be anticipated is about 250,000 of these cases. Currently, at DNA alone, we are sitting at about 50,000 in the previous financial year. If I'm correct, Brigadier Toko, we were at 52,000 cases that we received. We anticipate a five-fold increase with that approach, given that although it is a non-mandatory issue, police will really like to make the findings or the links to the crime scene. What is the current status? Currently, it is non-mandatory. It is anyway encouraged internally by SAPS through the awareness program that I was talking about, that the police continue to take and ensure that the intimate samples, the non-intimate rather, are taken. Currently, the police, after they've made that arrest, if they need a reference sample, they still proceed to take the arrestee to the medical practitioner from which a sample is obtained. They do not have the power to take the samples themselves. This is in line with the National Health Act. Until which time we've trained our own police officers, we shall continue to take them to the medical practitioner. And this delays in many instances the coming of samples. What are the action steps taken? Ensure sufficient internal capacity to deal with the influx or the increased workload, focusing on the personnel, post allocations and recruitment. The cost implications for that is estimated to be at 112 million. When the award is made for the training, we will be in a position to tell Parliament how far or how much has that whole bid process costed the police in terms of the training. In terms of the recruitment, amongst other presentations that General Pasani made in the previous round, it was the 800 posts that the chairperson of the portfolio was emphasizing. In terms of getting those numbers, the 800, so that we can ensure capacity of personnel and within the division to be able to process the amount of work that will be coming in as a result. So the combined estimated cost for that will be 112 million per annum. And what will be the indicator that we are on the right track? The revised reg, this is a resource allocation guide, which I must admit, Chairperson is taking quite a bit of time to finalize, getting the necessary changes in the police structures. This part of the process is delaying quite significantly, but we are in the process to establish the correct regs or the correct number of resources needed to be able to deal with the estimated influx of the cases. However, we have done recently the breakdown of the numbers that we are looking for in terms of this financial year. From the 800 posts, how many of those numbers will we allocate to the biology section? How many of the numbers from the 710 for the 2013-14 financial year to be able to deal with that capacity? So that information may also be provided at a later stage once it is verified by organizational development. The relevant section here was doing the recruitment, ensuring that the process go forth, and also that the tender process is finalized, as Brigadier Mshami, who is currently with us this morning. Another indicator there will be the installation and the validation of the specialized DNA equipment to perform the DNA analysis on the DNA reference samples. The contract has already been awarded, Madam Chair. The chairperson of the portfolio had said that we have to have the confidence, quotes from what she said, that the machines that are employed within the environment are operational. There were instances in the past where the estimated efficiency of the machine was not achieved for various reasons that have been investigated by the portfolio. In this instance, she wanted to get the confidence that when we roll out these automated systems, efficiency reports shall have been conducted, the report shall reach Parliament, and we'll be able to convince Parliament that are we going to indeed be able to achieve this 300,000 samples that we've estimated we should are looking forward to in this time around. We have submitted the validation reports in the previous sitting of Parliament. We are intending to provide the efficiency report in the next sitting. Currently, what is delayed is the tender process of the consumables that will be employed in the environment. As soon as the process or the award is made for the consumables, we will be able to tell when we'll be able to provide the efficiency report to say that, yes, we are happy that this system is producing as intended, that the process is in place. We will be reporting on it as soon as all these processes are finalized.
General Shirley, I'm sorry that I'm rushing you because I'm just a bit worried in terms of time for questions as well.
Okay.
And as you indicated, this wasn't on the program, and you said it was short. It's not that short, so I'm getting worried about it now. We need to have this. There's no question about it. So if I can ask you maybe just to focus first on the implication, the critical factors, and then your cost implications and your period of time that you are looking at, then the detail we will definitely do again. And I think this will obviously also change as we adopt the bill or the act once we finalize that. So if you can just maybe just for progress sake, the committee still needs to adopt reports and minutes as well today.
Thank you, Chair. I'll do so. Okay, I'll look then at the next one there that we talk to the training of police officers that's done destroying different DNA reference samples and not retroactive or retrospective from the enactment of the Act. That is the process of the expungement. Now, when do you expunge? Which ones will you start with? What method are you going to do to expunge? What method are you going to do to remove? This includes now establishing the contract for waste removals, amongst other things. This includes ensuring that all the policy systems or processes are followed. This is estimated to take about 250,000 per annum, the contract of which must comply to the stipulated National Environmental Management Act in terms of destruction of biohazards or biohazardous waste. Okay, the next one we'll be talking to, the establishment of the DNA database itself with the indices as suggested. The configuration cost estimated at 2 million rand. The chair must indicate that this process is amongst the process of the PCAM contract, which PCAM contract has not started with the development of this configuration. It's intended to be coming to a conclusion in September. We haven't done any work in terms of the integrations and the compilation of the programs. I am not too sure if this one will be able to be reported on fully in terms of the configuration aspect. It is outside our environment, but it is affecting us quite directly. That is estimated at 2 million rand. Okay, the comparative searches also is part of that total cost as per that category. Including the expungements, because it's also going to be determined from the database which categories will now be due for the expungement, because all the programs will be written into the DNA data to say now this sample must be expunged because of this reason, as it will be programmed, but that programming certainly hasn't even begun yet, although the specifications have been given out. The security measures on the integrity of the information on the database, these include access control, this includes vetting of personnel, law enforcement agencies, this includes interfacing of the CAS and the CRIMS, which system and which one, what are the accessibility issues that are in there, all these issues are among security issues, but they're all technical issues that are included in the estimated cost of doing the whole software around the DNA and the management of the security aspect related to it. The next aspect that it's talking to is the forensic awareness. It's on page 6. It talks about the provide a forensic awareness program with a reference to the national instructions for the DNA analysis and the DNA database. And then it talks about the establishment of the infrastructure, dedicated personnel, all the flyers, the brochures, all the time it will take, all the relationship with the NGOs in this regard, where all the processes have correctly been lined up. I must say in the process, at some point we were doing the sessions with the DNA projects amongst others of the NGOs, but in this new year we haven't met to sit and deal strategically with this issue going forward in terms of the awareness issues. But as soon as we are established and fully directional in terms of the forensic awareness, indeed, necessary, the key role players will be included in driving this process forward.
Chair, okay. Could I make a quick request? Is there perhaps anyone who has this document in an email format that could be sent to us now?
Okay.
If we have it.
I've asked that they make available so that we can give copies. I think she's almost done. That's why I've also asked that we just keep to the basic stuff. We will come back to this presentation again. We will have to do it in more detail.
Okay. Certainly. Thank you, Chair. And the last part of it is measures that are not taken into consideration in the bill. I must really emphasize, Chair, that the focus of the bill was mainly on the reference samples. If you read that document, more reference samples and more reference samples and more reference samples. At some point in time, we were to talk also to the crimes and stains, because those are the main drivers of this process. Yes, you will have a crime scene stain. There are no arguments without the crime scene stain you take note of. But the crime scene establishment is a real process. If you found a crime scene stain, you really need to find someone to match it with. So the bill is a little bit silent on the crime scene stain, but on the crime scene index and the processing thereof, the costing has also been done, $110 million per annum in consideration of all the systems for the crime scene stain. That will conclude the part of the presentation, Chair, which will be done in more detail, perhaps also in presentation format to also nicely outline the cost implications. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, General. Secretary, you want to?
Just quickly to make one point, when Major General Shetty is talking about the bill, she's talking about the old bill. Obviously, we're going to be amending that bill based on this policy and the implementation plan that has been developed, so just for clarity purposes.
Very much.
Excuse me, perhaps the last pointer, which is critical. I know you're going to ask it, accommodation. You're looking for these many people, accommodation. We have been granted a go-ahead to identify what our needs are in terms of accommodation. But guess what? I'm not sure if it's going to be realized in the time of implementation, but we are determined to work with what we have. But the process of ensuring that accommodation becomes a reality should kickstart, because it was in principle, okay. Thank you.
Very much to both the Secretariat and the Department for the presentations. Just before I open up for questions, can I get an indication from the Secretary of Police whether we're still on track in terms of the deadline for the introduction of the bill to the committees, and by when can we expect it?
Chair, as soon as the policy is approved, and we haven't had it signed off because we wanted the input of the Portfolio Committee before final, we basically would be able to draft quite quickly, because I think the fundamentals are all in place. The implementation plan and the policy will speak to the areas that need to be included. So I think we were given the date of August, September to be able to present to this committee, and we feel that we will be able to do that based on what is approved here today.
Yeah, August, September does not mean end of September. It means end of August, beginning September, because otherwise we're running into troubles again. Yeah, and not January next year either. So please, if we can keep to that. And I would also request, if we do find in the run-up to the process that there is a delay, that we be informed so that we can adapt our own program accordingly as well. Members, I'm going to open for questions. Honourable Molebati, Honourable Kulabana, Honourable Adwe, Honourable George, Reverend Meshu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenters. My first question is for General Shezi. On how far are you with the accreditation for the forensic laboratory? My second question is on, I heard you mention the training of officers by the medical practitioner, and you said it delays the process. How long still will you be in that situation? You also mentioned a $2 million cost, and you said you have not done any work. Am I right? Yeah. So far. Why? My question is why. My other question is on this the training of officers for the sample taking. Do you have a particular criteria to use or refer to, or are you just going to have officers who have interest to take on this training? Is there a particular criteria that you're going to use? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. One big fear that came out of our budget briefing was the Treasury directive that 9,000 SAPS members must be allowed to fall away through natural attrition and non-hiring, and that the last intake at the police colleges would be in January. So we immediately had input about this legislation, and the fear was expressed that the people you need, the experts you have to headhunt, that entire process may now fall away. I know they do allow, they are allowing a certain number of hirings, but I don't know that the other divisions in SAPS might not fight you for those, because they also need experts to be headhunted for various divisions and the implementation of various programs. So that is an issue. I'd like to know what plans you have in place to get around that Treasury directive, because we most certainly can't legislate something that may well be unimplementable. The taking of DNA from citizens. This is going to be the big one for the public. I know that one considers the taking of DNA to be non-invasive, but there are citizens who will question that decision. There is, or in this brief document, and I'm quite sure it's probably dealt with, but I want to check, there was no mention of the fact that DNA taken from women and children must be by women. You know, there is, if one finds oneself in a position where the only trained person is a man, and that man has to go and take DNA from a woman, she may well yell assault. You know, it could end up in a big drama. So I think that must be very, very clearly outlined, that is a directive. It's not a suggestion or a like to have. I'd like to know what provisions you've inserted or considering inserting in relation to the taking of DNA from everyone and anyone who ever visits the laboratory. Now, Brigadier Shezi and we went through this in the United Kingdom, but I'm also very mindful of the fact that, for example, I think most of the ANC members, only one, were very reluctant to have their DNA taken. They refused point blank. This may well be, and IFP, I hear him giggling behind me. Now, that is an attitude that was prevalent on this police portfolio committee. So if one extrapolates that out to the citizenry, it might well be a problem. So, and yet, one imagines that there will be numbers of people, for example, from overseas. Let us say they come to visit, your counterparts from another country come to visit the laboratory. There must be a strict operating procedure that ensures that their DNA is there. It's on the laboratory database to ensure the possibility of cross-pollination is dealt with. We have to reach for the highest possible professional level internationally. And obviously taking, you know, the first step in taking has been taken now to get the laboratories accredited. That's been a huge issue for a long time. So good on that, and I hope that continues. But let's set the bar high from the outset so that we try and circumvent any possibility of being discredited somewhere down the line. We don't need to spend hundreds of millions of rands and then find that we fall at a small hurdle like that. I'd like to know what consideration you've given to familial searches. Certainly in the UK, a few of us went through and we saw the numbers of serial killers and murderers caught through this means, and it is simply running it through the database to see if there's anyone close, and their experts have found that criminality tends to run and be linked, infrequently linked, that if it is the norm for a family or a group of families to be criminal, you might well find there's a link where one brother and the other brother were both at the same crime scene. Certainly they were finding that with blood off a brick, and it was the one brother killed and the other one had already been arrested umpteen times for other crimes. So I'm interested in what progress has been made in that regard. And finally, I don't know if I missed it, I'm hoping I misheard you, your reference to the Department of Health. I went quite weak at the thought in any way, shape or form that the Department of Health may be involved, simply because I know of the difficulties today in getting one single vial of blood tested for alcohol can take 2 years. I mean, there are courts who just throw out drunk driving cases after 18 months again and again because they can never get the blood vial back or the result from the laboratory because that falls under the Ministry of Health. So I would like to know that we're actually going to distance this as far as possible away from what is a dysfunctional laboratory system as possible. So I need to know, how deeply are they going to be involved? And please tell me I misheard and they're not going to be involved at all. Thank you.
Honourable Sabir.
Thanks, Chairperson. Please, just a clarity on an expansion within 6 months if the arrestee is not guilty profile. So do you mean that if he's guilty, should the remains not on database? Thanks.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the presentations. But I want also just, you mentioned this question of constitutional rights, people's constitutional rights. You mentioned it in passing. I hope when the bill is presented, that's going to be more detailed, because that to me is important. This thing that it will take into account constitutional rights, it does not really satisfy me. I would be happy that in that it's going to be at least clear how do you make sure that constitutional rights are taken into account. The DNA repository presented administered by biology, you said you have opted for SAPS, FSS, and you said this is because of cost. Can you just tell us what are these costs you're talking about? I'm asking this because I would be interested to know what is the state of this this laboratory of the SAPS. But the last time I had it, they were not in a good state. So you won't have to do, when you talk about costs, you won't have to convince me that what is it cheaper? Cheaper to go for a private. I'm not saying go for a private, or to go for a state facility which is not working. You see why I'm saying this? You know, you're going to be bringing at some stage the Firearms Control Act. You know, when we dealt with the Firearms Control Act, we were very thorough. We brought the management probably 10 times. Asking in one question, are implementation like the general is given, are you ready to implement the act? And they gave an assurance which is amazing. But up to today, there's still problems so far as implementing Firearms Control Act. So I'm worried. The statement, of course. far as the question of accreditation which has been asked, I hope you both you know if you believe that this is giving problems, the courts are also having problems, what is delaying in having this accreditation? Is there a big problem in getting accreditation? Of course, I spoke about your recommendation, but your recommendation is just because of cost. I would like, honestly speaking, because sometimes it's easy to say because of cost. When you find that probably if you had given this to a private company, to have done it more efficiently and more properly, and probably the costs are not, because sometimes you go to a department which is not using the thing properly, you find it costs more. So that's why I say probably we need to, the integrity, which is then I talk about of the SAPS forensic database. You talk about it, but also in person. Can we, or what assurance can you give to us about the integrity? Because you must understand now we're talking about issues that affect, to some extent, the rights of individuals. So the integrity, all of that, you are even talking about training of police officers, but you say up to now you do not have, I think you said you have not received the funds for that training. Because of course you said it's going to be done as soon as possible. What is the delay? Because we're going to go to same route. We pass a law, we find that 5 years down the line, I think that is 2004 when the Firearms Act was. Today, up to today, the Firearms Control Act, the police are still battling. Now, are you going to make sure that this is done? These police officers, which you must train them, and also. There was a question asked, because I also saw it in the papers, that there is an instruction that you must reduce the police. To what extent is that going to affect this thing? So, because I think mainly what we need is to make sure that it is the volunteers. You talked about volunteers. How are you going to deal with this issue of volunteers? How are you going to make sure that these volunteers, whatever, because if you do one wrong thing in whatever the volunteers have given to you, you would kill every confidence. Because for that you must build confidence. If there is no confidence, you're going to have a problem. So, you talk about training this, this is my last question, training these police officers by medical practitioners. Now, the medical practitioners are not many in this country. They are very busy. How can you assure us that they're going to have time besides the work they are doing with the limited numbers we have, they're going to have time to make sure that they go and train police. So, because I'm asking this question in general, so that not 3 years down the line, said we had a good intentions to train these police officers. But our biggest problem, the medical practitioners are very busy. They can't train them. So we were still waiting. There's a queue. But by that time, the bill is there. The bill is no longer even a bill, probably it's an act. But you can't implement because you don't have personnel to implement it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. Can I ask members that we ask the question, that we don't try and answer the question as well, please, that we give the department and the secretariat an opportunity to answer the questions. Reverend Mission?
I'll ask three short questions. The first one, an assumption is made that if the database is located with the private sector, that the quality would be compromised. Now, I want to know on what basis is that assumption made that the quality would be compromised if it is kept by the private sector. And the second question about the RSD's index, touching also on the issue of rights. If a person is arrested on frivolous charges, and that person obviously denies the allegations, and that person is arrested, some DNA samples are taken, and that person chooses to go to court, what would be the defense when one claims their constitutional right to privacy because their DNA is taken when they are denying allegations, when they do not want to, and that person definitely claims is innocent and goes to court? Will this legislation be able to stand? And the third one, after the arrestee has been arrested and is acquitted within 6 months, an expansion must take place. Now, we know in many cases that the police are not very good at keeping their wit regarding time frames. Now, if a person discovers after 6 months that their name has not been expunged, can that person successfully challenge this and say, from the beginning I told you, now my name is still there when the law says it should not be there? Are the mechanisms that the police are putting in place to ensure that they will be able to keep up with the 6 months that are promising legislation? Thank you.
It's only one question, Chairperson. On the slide where you talk about the person who is going to consist the causes of the Human Rights Department of Justice, Health, DCS, SAPS, Civilian Secretariat, it was deliberate that you left Home Affairs. I'm asking this question deliberately because Home Affairs is one of the people who are using human resource. Do you deliberately, or it was the mistake that Home Affairs was left behind? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I've also got a couple of questions, but may I make a remark as well? I think on the one hand, to remind members that part of the reason why we have split the original bill was our concerns as members regarding human rights issues in the drafted bill. So I think we are quite correct to highlight those issues yet again as part of the policy, that we make sure that they are there. I would also like to comment that I think from some of the questions and remarks that has been made is what members are saying is that let's look in the policy already for penalties. For instance, if in a 6 month period there is no expulsion of the record, that the policy also talks to penalties in terms of that. I think that is the issues that members are raising. I've got a couple of questions. I'll be quick about it. The first one is, you mentioned arrested and charged. Can you just explain to us exactly what you say? You're not saying DNA of only arrested, but the person doesn't get charged. It's once the person gets charged that the DNA be taken. We just want clarity on that. Then the volunteer index, is that just for elimination purposes, or are we also talking about the volunteer index in terms of missing persons, etc., etc., so we can get an indication of that, and how do you split the two? How do you differentiate between the two? You, to some extent, have answered the question about the authorized police officers, where they're going to be. But I think we need to get some more clarity. I think one of the members did ask, I think it was Honourable Molabatu, that asked, what type of police officer are we looking at? I think it's a very important question also for the credibility of the legislation once it's passed. What type of police officer we are looking at in terms of taking these DNA samples. I mean, I remember members themselves saying that they would have a problem with any police officer, even with a buckle swab, invading their space in that way. Page 14 on the presentation made by the Secretariat, I do have a concern about the mentioning of the word may in terms of innocent. Maybe. That was one of the issues we had in the previous, in the drafted bill as well. And it shouldn't be, in terms of policy, it shouldn't be a may, it should be a must. You know, when the person's been found innocent, it must be expelled. How do you intend populating the database? Is it still the intention to go to already convicted and detained prisoners, awaiting trial prisoners, etc., and then to get a DNA from them in terms of populating the database? If we can just get clarity on that. The oversight body, is that it's basically what you're saying is a representative of each of these bodies. Implementation plan, yes, if I can get to that. You know, General, the problem is that we have is our experience at police stations. And it's the management and control of what in the end is, what in the beginning was a very good intention, but in the end turns to something completely different. How do we control, how do we manage the actual samples? How do you foresee, for instance, the policy is silent on it, on picking up these samples, on the transport from the samples from the police stations to the laboratories? Because we're now talking about central, if I understand correctly, central collecting points. There would be, it won't be every single station, they need to be collected in time, etc., etc. How do we foresee that process taking place? I presume it will also have to do with the quality control process. It's basically the chain of evidence that how do we foresee, are we going to make use of couriers to go and collect, or how are we going to collect from the stations? But also the control of the actual swap before it's been used. General Tracy, we, Potchefstroom Police Station, I mean, we can tell you that we found more than 1,500 DNA rape kits that have expired. And those things cost money. So how are we making sure in terms of that? I think even if we don't have the answers now, the point is these are issues that we feel, you know, should get attention as well. How many, I think that's a very important question for implementation. How many police officers are we looking at in terms of training? How many centres, how many police officers per centre? Because police work in shifts, and one would also presume that these centres, and that immediately raises the issue around placing them in courts, is that court won't be open 24 hours a day. So, you know, are we looking, how many police officers are we looking at to train in the end? How many centres are we looking at? I think that's the detail we would like to see in the implementation plan that might not be there at this stage already. PCM, you raised it, General. Is PCM the best solution for this? I'm not talking about anything else. I'm talking about the bill before us. Is PCM the best solution? You are not seeing the benefits of PCM at this stage. There are huge questions about PCM. It's delaying you in many ways already. Is it the best process? Should we not stop that process at this point and look at the process designed for DNA specifically? Is a catch-all PCM really the answer? The security between the different indexes. You haven't spoken either in the policy or the implementation about that. How do we ensure security between the different indexes so that my DNA as a volunteer doesn't end up between the DNA of a convicted person or a wanted person, even worse, rather be on the list of the convicted persons, but not on the wanted persons. Training of detectives in the usage of DNA as evidence. Both the policy and the implementation plan is silent on it. I do believe if we're not going to train the detectives in using it as evidence in court, that we're missing the boat again, because then we would have maybe a very good DNA process, but our detective who must give evidence on it is not capable of giving evidence in court on it. So how are we going to look at that? That's from my side as questions. Secretary, it is 11 o'clock. I see there's fresh coffee. Can we take a 10-minute break and then they can start with the answers? Reverend Meshu, can I ask that you just answer Reverend Meshu's two questions before we take a break? Reverend Meshu, can I ask you just to repeat shortly for them your two questions? Because he's got to leave. So if I can just ask that you just quickly answer his two questions, please.
The first one is the assumption that has been made that if the database is stored, is kept by the private sector, then the quality will be compromised. On what is that based? And the second one is, since we're all presumed innocent until proven guilty, and a person is being accused, falsely accused, and that person is arrested, if that person goes to court because their right to privacy has been violated when he has been charged and their DNA tested unwillingly because of false frivolous charges, will be able to stand? Will the legislation be able to stand in court when a person goes there? And the third one is the assurance that the record will be expunged definitely within 6 months, as promised in legislation. And if that does not happen, can a person not take that matter to court when they discover that the record is not expunged?
I'll ask Bilkis and maybe Major General Shazi to answer some of the ones. I think that the issue of it not being expunged, I think that the point was made that maybe in the policy document we need to talk to penalties. In the policy document as well as the legislation of not expunging it, because I think we made it very clear that within not after 6 months, within 6 months it must be expunged. So I think penalties for failure to expunge it, etc., is something which we take the point that Honourable Member Mishu and that Honourable Member Van Baek have raised, that maybe even in the policy we don't have to spell out the penalties, but say that the legislation must speak to penalties for non-compliance. Then I'll just hand over to Ms. Omar and Major Shazi to answer the other two questions.
On the privatizing issue, I have extensive notes. First of all, sorry, you asked me a question on the quality being compromised. Here I must be honest, when we said the presentation, I had spoken in the policy about, I'm trying to remember now, the DNA analysis costing, and I came up with a figure of 2.1 billion rand industry. And then I remembered over the weekend that we are talking specifically to a DNA database here and not DNA analysis. So that would fall out. So apologies for that, because I didn't want to, it was very technical and I had confused the one issue there. So quality won't be compromised here in the regard to the DNA database. Sorry, I forgot your other question on expungement. I think the secretary answered that. And then the third question spoke to... frivolous charges. Yeah, I've got that also. Sorry, this was a very technical document, so just let me consult my notes. We're thinking about it, and I think I'll answer the chairperson's question here. So, in relation to the arrestees index, we're talking about person charged. So, if you're arrested, you won't necessarily have to give your profile, but if you're charged, then you're required to give your profile. We're concerned because I know the issue that was raised previously was the potential for human rights abuses, and that's why we've been specific that the arrestees index should only consider people who have been charged. But I think I missed the second part of your question.
Can I ask General Swiss, I think she wants to add to that. The second part of the question was basically what happens if can the person then take it to court and what would be the consequences of that? I think we must also remember that charge does not mean the charge by the detective or the police officers, it means charge by the court. So I think that to some extent addresses Reverend Hesh's concern as well. It's not whether the detective lays a charge, it is that charge being confirmed at court. I mean, you've got to take the detainee to court to be charged. So that is the first part of it. Can I ask General Shiz, I'll come to you, Honourable Kulabana, just to ask, because I want us to take a break and then come back so that we can have all the answers. I just want the Reverend to be able to go.
Thanks, Chair. My answer is really, Honourable Minister, to add on to what the Secretariat already had explained. Let me start with the prioritization issue on, in terms of the quality. No way will the quality be compromised. The same process is if the decision will be taken by the portfolio or by the committee to say we shall pass this and this shall be the markers that shall be employed and the laboratory shall be accredited and those provisions maintained. All competent people who would meet those criteria will certainly produce the results as said. So it's not an issue more of the quality of processing. Perhaps the issue law lies more towards the governance or the information contained resting in the public sector. What I understand the question to be saying, also in terms of the RSTs, what is the constitutionality of what you are raising in terms of the person being pronounced innocent until found guilty? If it were passed in the sense that now the person is charged and we are taking the sample, we do not say in the policy or in the DNA bill that you are already convicted. It shall be passed to limit those people who, where arrests were made and no charge was done. So if the person is formally charged and it is a constitutional correctness that the person is formally charged and then it gives the right to take a sample, nowhere do I see any violations there because the person can actually have the right to present their case to disprove why in those instances where they're not supposed to take that onus rest onto him to prove the contrary, but I don't think or I do not foresee any constitutional violations there. But in terms of your question, in terms of expanding the profiles after 6 months, those are again governance matters. I was saying earlier on, if you let one body, be it the private, be it the police, to govern the DNA database, it is likely that this can happen. If you have an oversight body that ensures that that's what is supposed to happen, happens, and all the stakeholders are involved, it shall surely happen. Because now the governance issue will really be managed by an independent body, which is not an administering body, which will be two related bodies. So if those things are put into policy and they are monitored effectively, that process will really be taken into account. If it all else fails, that governance body now fails as well, if it does fail, then, of course, then there should be penalty issues, as the Secretariat had already alluded to. So I think I've covered the question. Thank you.
You need to ask the question now, or can we do it after?
I'm covered with that one. I just wanted, I don't know who it'll be, but afterwards, if they could just answer the issue on, I wasn't sure on the DNA being taken. I mean, I know we had a case that we heard about where a man who was stopped for a traffic violation, automatically they take DNA and they found out 20 years previously he'd raped a 14-year-old. So how far is this going to be stretched? I'll wait till after tea for that answer. Thank you.
Mimus, it's my eyes. 10 past 11. Can we come back 20 past 11 and then give the department and secretariat an opportunity to answer?
can issue a handful of them, but I'll